Dr. Zokri, thank you so much for making time to join us on Niaga Spotlight, all the way from Rabdan Academy in Abu Dhabi. How are you doing today?
Thank you, Tamina, for having me this evening. I'm doing well and good. I hope that it's the same for you as well.
Absolutely. So, Dr. Zokri, let's get the conversation started. Now, looking at the Red Sea crisis, but firstly, let's set the tone for what's actually happening and why. What is the strategic importance of the Red Sea in terms of specifically security implications and the wider reaching impacts on trade?
Thank you. From the strategic point of view, any invasions of the Red Sea will imply the unavailability for us to use the Suez Canal. Now, the Suez Canal is actually a bridge between the European region as well as Middle East and the Asian region. It is a very important slot, sea-lined operation and communication that bridges between these two regions. And any disruptions that happens on the Red Sea will have implications in terms of increase of the voyage with thousands of miles. We also will see an increase of days utilized for deliveries and cargoes, and definitely the costs of operation will be increased. Now, if we sum up all of that, it will actually be absorbed to consumers like us, even if we are not within the region. It will definitely reach to our pocket as consumers to this product, because the global supply chain is very much inevitable these days in the world of globalizations. And we also have to know what the data seems to suggest, that the Red Sea is actually accommodating 12% of the global trade. Now, it takes also 30% of the global traffic involving the vessels that worth amounting to $1 trillion of goods. So the volume and the scale of trade is definitely huge of what's happening in the Red Sea. Now, obviously, as an alternative, people would say that we can also encircle Africa via the Cape of Good Hope. But when we actually calculated the journey, if we encircle Africa via the Cape of Good Hope, it will actually increase 10 extra days of a voyage of these vessels, as well as it will take up more than $1 million increase of its cost. So definitely it's not a viable way for consumers or even to the Southeast Asian economies, especially we are still in the process of the COVID-19 pandemic economic recovery. So the increase of this cost will definitely have an implications to consumers and the Southeast Asian economies. And not only to Southeast Asia, obviously to the whole world, because as I said, the Red Sea that contains the Bab el-Mandeb Strait is where the militarization is happening actively right now, as well as the Suez Canal as one of the very small choke points in the world that connects between the West and the East.
Thank you so much for highlighting the staggering numbers. Now, of course, in December, all the delays cumulatively caused actually a 1.3% decline in world trade. Moving along, would you say there is any historical precedence we can refer to looking at the Red Sea crisis right now, Dr. Zokri?
Now, in 2021, the very recent case is where the Suez Canal has been blocked. There was a blockage to use the Suez Canal due to high militarizations happening in the area. Now, we also have seen on how trade has decreased quite significantly during that time. And historically, if we refer to the precedence in 1967 to 1975, due to war, the Suez Canal has also been closed and inoperative. Now, again, the Suez Canal alone will record a very high number of trade volumes, and these will actually save a lot of cost and actually money if we actually use the Suez Canal. And the data seems to suggest within the closure between 1967 to 1975, we have seen an increase of 10% of the cost using the oceans. And then that is very much high during that time. So again, the precedent is always there. That is a very high conflict and high militarization area. And as I said before, even though that we are using, we can actually encircle Africa via the Cape of Good Hope, that will also increase the cost of its operation and it will not be efficient and sustainable in the long term.
Sure. Thank you so much for that. And now with so many other states also getting involved in the conflict, particularly NATO states, could you share perhaps a situational analysis of what this augurs?
I think in the short term, let's begin with the short term to the medium term as well as in the long term. Now, in the short term, that we will see that the escalations will continue to happen, will continue to actually evaporate into the securitizations in the area, as well as the Bab al-Mandeb Strait and the Red Sea. And we have seen on how the interventions of major superpowers like the UK, the US, as well as involved the Houthi rebels will definitely prolong for a period of weeks or even months, and we can expect that the Houthi rebels will be declined in terms of tactical power, but we are not sure on how that the influence can also be curbed. Now, in terms of the medium term, we will be probably expecting an increase of oil prices. As I said, now even in December that we have seen an increase of 60%. And in January, we are seeing the increase of 78%. And in February, if this continue to persistently happening in the Red Sea, we are seeing an increase of 94% of oil prices. And that is actually a huge price to pay, especially to the Southeast Asian economy. Again, I must say in the medium term, the Southeast Asian economy is still not recovered from its pandemic recovery process. So any cost is definitely a huge price for us to pay. And we cannot just calculate that it is not as significant to other big players of the economy, as this will definitely have a domino effect, not only within the MENA region, Middle East and North Africa region, it will have a domino effect to Asia region as well as Southeast Asia region. Now, in the long term, Tahmina, we still see that the Red Sea is a viable and a strategic way for SLOC, the sea lines operation and communications. It saves a lot of time and a lot of costs, and we don't see circling the Cape of Good Hope is sustainable in a very long term. Therefore, there are many stakeholders that are really paying attention to what's happening in the Red Sea. However, I think that the risk of this conflict will prolong and perhaps will becoming more complications as what's happening in the Red Sea is a consequence of conflicts that's happening in the Middle East region. And those dots are actually suggesting that it is not a one per se or a single issue in the Red Sea, but it's also a connection with other issues and securitizations that happens in the Red Sea. But we will also perhaps we might see the shift in the long term in which that the productions and manufacturing of goods and the consumption will shift towards Asia and will shift towards Southeast Asia because of the slot has been disrupted. So we might see there is a shift towards Southeast Asia. And I think this is the opportunity that Southeast Asian economies as well as the Northeast Asian economies to grab to make sure that the consumption as well as the innovation and productions is well balanced and well maintained so that the economy will have an interdependency within the region. This is to actually minimize the impact and the implications of having too reliance on the other regions outside of Southeast Asia.
Thank you. Thanks very much for that fantastic analysis and really setting the tone for what's happening with regards to the Red Sea crisis. Dr. Zokri, it's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Tansriso, thank you so much for making time to join us on Niaga Spotlight. Lovely to have you with us.
Yeah, thank you very much for inviting me.
Tansri, of course, looking at the Federation of Malaysian Manufacturers, I would love to get your thoughts regarding the ongoing Red Sea crisis and some of the impacts which could already be felt by Malaysian manufacturers, exporters, importers, and the shipping industry players. I think it's very important that FMM helps us to frame this, especially considering the maritime industry. It contributes about 40% of our GDP, and of course, about 90% of Malaysia's exports go out by sea.
The Federation of Malaysian Manufacturers is deeply concerned and also really alarmed that the escalating security crisis unfolding in the Red Sea region, which has forced several of the world's largest shipping lines to divert vessels away to a much longer route around the southern tip of the Africa instead. Through circumnavigating Africa, it's about 1 to 2 weeks of a longer time to reach the destination. And this will not only will increase the cost and also to increase the time to deliver the goods to the customers, especially to Middle East and to North Africa and to Europe markets. And we are quite concerned that with this longer period of delivery time by the shipping lines will increase the cost to Malaysia's exporters and also importers.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Now, actually, some statistics are showing that large ships may actually be incurring almost about $100,000 just in fuel costs for each day of travel. Of course, there's also other extra costs as well. So looking at a little bit deeper into the same question, Tansri, would you be able to say that for freight forwarders, warehouses, especially any of the Malaysian players, would they be looking at any benefits because local maritime players may actually gain from rising rates?
Actually, the importers and exporters or shippers, they can consider FOB means free on board basis for exporting during this period of time. And with this FOB, the cost it will be at the purchaser side. It means at the importer side. With these action plans, I believe that the shippers are in Malaysia, especially, can reduce the impact because of this Red Sea crisis.
Very interesting indeed. Now, higher international prices, of course, will affect purchasing power and maybe even our domestic demand, right?
Yeah.
So moving along from there, looking at the fact that the beginning of the year, especially in 2024, Tansriso, Q1 and Q2 are projected to be very high demand periods. There are going to be several global festivities. Of course, we've got the upcoming Lunar New Year season, which will be followed quite quickly by Ramadan. So what are FMM's recommendations for shippers to help to minimize delays to meet customer demands and also reduce the impact of the Red Sea situation?
For FMA, we would like to ask importers and exporters to carry out the following action plans. Number one is to advance export bookings. So you mean that we can ask the shipping liners for a clear deadline for all the cargoes to be shipped out in advance. And we also advise our shippers to get support needed from shipping lines so that to facilitate shippers to plan their business operations. FMM also calls on the shipping companies to honor the pre-booked freight rate because all the shippers, when they book, they will have freight rates being determined much earlier. We would like the shipping lines to assist all the importers and exporters to honor these pre-booked freight rates so that the Malaysian shippers will not incur any extra costs. And the next action plans that we would like to suggest to our shippers or importers or exporters is to explore any multimodal transportation options. It means that manufacturers are to consider combining different modes of transportation. Now you see we can from air, rail or road to optimize shipping routes to reduce delays and also to lower the shipping costs. Air freight, although may not cater for large volume, but can still offer more flexibility for those high value added goods.
Yes, definitely. So certainly looking at some options rather than be stuck when it actually comes to the crunch time, right? And in some part of the country, have you noticed that any of the manufacturers or other associations, are they heeding FMM's recommendations? And how quick will it be? Will they be able to pivot should the situation perhaps worsen in the next few weeks?
At the moment, so far, many of our FMM members are using the FOB. So far, we have not received any complaints from our importers and exporters yet. If this Red Sea crisis further escalates, I believe that the situations might change up. So it means that the ships could be delayed because of the different route. Then the ships come back will be delayed and also will face shortage of containers. Now, if there is acute shortage of containers, then the cost might further escalate. This is our big concern.
Container shortages, that would be extremely concerning, definitely, for the Malaysian maritime-based economy. Tan Sri, if we could now then go into another very interesting area of discussion that this brings up, actually, once again, not for the first time. What didn't happen with during the COVID-19 lockdown, a wider pivot didn't actually occur to looking at ASEAN as a supply chain hub. Once again, now another opportunity arises for this actually. What are FMM's thoughts about this? Having the fact that the Red Sea crisis, yes, it's happening, but let's now look at ASEAN to become our supply chain hub rather than be always in a situation where we are looking at the supply chain being at risk and how we can move towards in a crisis like this.
In actual fact, during the COVID-19 pandemic, we have learned important lessons that at that time we face all sorts of PPE shortage. And now with this Red Sea crisis, I think it's time for us to learn how to get more products or raw materials from nearshoring. It means that we can work closely with all ASEAN countries, and we need to have more collaboration so that our supply chain security can be further improved. The varying levels of economic development in ASEAN and a couple of each country's industry specialization allow greater complementation rather than competition between member countries in ASEAN. This is what we think. For example, when we have the RCEP, Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership Agreements.
Yes.
This is a very important multilateral agreements that among all the ASEAN countries can work together and can share the data. And it's important that all the ASEAN countries are prepared, whether do they agree to share the information among ASEAN countries during this crisis time or not.
Absolutely. So I think what you pointed out is that perhaps we need a lot more collaboration, but probably this will be more private sector related. What are your thoughts on that? Or do you see perhaps a wider movement amongst ASEAN governments to recognize this opportunity, even, of course, in the midst of a crisis?
During 2020, FMM proposed for all the refactoring sectors in whole ASEAN to set up an ASEAN manufacturing network together with 9 other manufacturing and trade-related associations in ASEAN. This includes like Singapore Manufacturing Federation to jointly develop recommendations to the ASEAN governments that will assist manufacturers to strengthen their positions in the regional and global value chains, not only to further bolster resilience against the evolving challenges, but also to capitalize on foreign investors trying to diversify their supply chains beyond China, as well as to attract Chinese investment diversion to ASEAN. And this one also on China plus one. It means the European Union organizations or American companies, they can choose ASEAN, especially Malaysia, as their investment center. And with this ASEAN Manufacturing Network, there is communications among the ASEAN countries. We hope that the ASEAN countries can officially adopt this ASEAN Manufacturing Network. In fact, ASEAN Business Advisory Council did agree to set up this ASEAN Manufacturing Network. The issue is the implementation on this ASEAN Manufacturing Network, whether it's effective for all ASEAN countries to adopt or not.
Absolutely. But at the same time, the opportunity is definitely very attractive. We've had a solid economic performance all across ASEAN, together with a combined GDP of more than $3 trillion USD. Thank you for pointing that out, Tan Sri So. Tan Sri, from there, moving along to, of course, the fact that this week is also the World Economic Forum happening in Davos. And economists have also noted during Davos that there are increasing worries that the world's major economies may now suffer an overall recession this year due to the Red Sea crisis. What are some strategies, in your opinion, for Malaysia to cushion against this scenario, considering, of course, our dependency on our major trade partners?
FMM would like to suggest that to have export diversification as the main strategy so that we are not depending on our conventional or traditional export markets. At the same time, we also need to strengthen our Malaysian SMEs to upskill their business model and to grow across borders. And we believe that the key strategy that will help us achieve trade expansions is a free trade agreements. Currently, the latest information that show the trade with FTA countries contribute over 65% of our Malaysia's total trade. In order to diversify our trade beyond our current major partners, we are also pushing the governments to explore non-traditional markets through the preferential trade agreements. The non-traditional markets can be Middle East, can be Eastern Europe, it can be Central Asia, and in Africa markets. So we believe that all these markets are big potential for Malaysia. But we need our governments to give more market development grant to our SMEs so that they are prepared to export to these non-traditional markets. And we also understand that Malaysia also had some progress in the Middle East, the Comprehensive Economic Partnership, for example, Malaysia-UAE, Comprehensive Economic Partnership Agreement, and we hope that Malaysia is able to sign this. And FMM is also a strong proponent to Malaysia government to resume Malaysia-EU free trade agreement so that we have more market access, so that we are able to export more of our value-added products to all these FTA countries.
Mm, great point there. Thanks so much, Tan Sri So, for actually elaborating upon what the export diversification should ideally look like. And hopefully it's going to move and progress beyond just the signing table for such agreements, so that we can actually see what this looks like in real time, right? Rather than waiting for perhaps another even more expanded crisis. Wonderful. And Tan Sri So, one final area that I would love for you to help explain to us a little bit more. Now, let's look at the fact that our nearest neighbor, Singapore, for example, prepared contingency plans to cope with the supply chain disruption since the pandemic. What has been in Malaysia's similar playbook, and any further recommendations from FMM about the Red Sea crisis?
Regarding this subject, FMM would like to urge the Malaysian government to keep a close watch on the situation to ensure that the impact does not escalate and further burden businesses and the economy. A supply chain turbulence is likely to persist. Malaysian manufacturers will need to prepare contingency plans for import-export activities and also keep close contact with foreign partners and diversify source to protect their supply chains. In addition, we advise the exporters to include compensation clause and exemption of responsibility in emergencies as part of their contracts with the importers, and also insurance policies should be obtained to minimize financial risk. This is our proposal.
Absolutely. And I particularly I'm appreciative that you highlighted the need for insurance as well. But thank you. Thank you very much, Tan Sri So, for making time to share your excellent insights regarding the Red Sea crisis. It's been a pleasure having you on Niaga Spotlight.
Thank you very much. Thank you.